Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Mullet Cast, the podcast where business and pleasure collide. My name is Evan Balmer.
What's going on, everyone? It's Mike Mercia.
What's happening, Mike?
Same old. I'm excited to play with instruments today.
That's right. Because today we do have a multi-instrumentalist in the house, April Centrone. April is a musician, teacher, music therapist based in the Jersey Shore. She is also the owner of an emerging music and arts center in Asbury, Fourth Wave Rehearsal Studios. Find the studios online at Fourth Wave AP. Fourth is spelled out, so F-O-U-R-T-H Wave AP.
Good spelling.
And follow April at April Centrone. We also got Kira Sanchez in the house. She's a little shy right now, but she is going to perform with us as well. What's going on, April?
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you doing today?
Wonderful, thanks for having me.
No problem. All right, so Mike's got something he's got to get off his chest. We just, first of all, let's say congratulations. You recently were married.
Thank you.
That's awesome. I saw David Ross Lawn was the photographer.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the other photo thing.
That was you going to bring up? Yeah. Yes.
I'm glad
you guys tag him on the IG account.
So David did some nice photos. He's actually been a guest on the show as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that was cool. So how do you know David?
I feel like a long time. You know, in the musician circle, he's a wonderful musician, amazing, and just love his photos. He's done photos of us before, I thought he would just be the perfect touch for the ceremony.
Yeah, you have one of those, like, I think what everyone dreams of is their wedding photo. Like, your group shot he took was really awesome.
It was beautiful.
That's cool. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's awesome.
Thank you so much.
So let's talk about your music career. How did that get started?
Oof. Well, I started playing drums when I was 9 years old. Drums, percussion, snare, you know, Western instruments. Mm. Played orchestra in school, then played the jazz band. And high school, played in garage bands, played a bunch of grunge music.
Nice.
Basically, my family's from the city, mostly. Mm. And as soon as I was done with high school, I basically escaped back up to the city.
Where'd you go to high school? Like in Jersey?
Yeah, Pleasant Beach.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Nice. And so I went on to take forensic psychology in school. I went to John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City.
They're known for their percussion program.
Yeah, exactly, right?
they teach you how to beat raps.
Right. You know what it was? No one said to me, oh, you can have a career in music. You know, definitely not. And I also was genuinely interested in psychology and figuring out how people tick and how can I help people, how can I help children.
Mm-hmm.
So it made sense. And I liked law and I liked that merging. So I went for forensic psychology. But but I never stopped playing music. And while I was bumming around in New York, you know, there's so many amazing concerts there.
Right.
And I was yearning for something, but I wasn't quite sure what it was. You know, I experienced a lot of obviously rock earlier and jazz and so forth. And then started to see these experimental concerts, but I was still looking for something, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And then I started seeing these world music concerts. You know, I started seeing there was a lot of Indian music. I went to an all-night Indian performance, and I started like, wow, there's something here. There's trance. There's you know, something about traditional music. So I kept sneaking around, checking out shows. And then one day I heard about this concert by a Palestinian oud and violin virtuoso. I said, let me check this out. And literally, I remember February 2005, I was 20 years old, my whole life changed in that seat. It was something about Arabic music that just absolutely threw me. Wow. My life turned around 180 degrees, and it was wonderful and terrifying because I was like, oh my God, suddenly my life has to be about this, but I know zero about this music.
Right.
So I just went in hard. I looked him up online, Simon Shaheen. I saw he had an Arabic music retreat, like this 1 week thing in the summer where you study the theory.
Right.
And I went, and that was it. I met the whole community, and my life just took off in that direction. And that's all I listened to, all I played for a while, all the shows I saw. And and then eventually started performing and teaching the music. And then I toured a lot around Middle East, around Europe, around the Far East, South America, doing a mixture of educational visits, like different universities, or doing weird experimental things with drum set. Like there's a band called Secret Chiefs 3,
right?
Which mixes like sort of Persian Arab influences with extremely heavy rock music.
Right.
So I was playing drums for that and playing percussion. So a lot of different groups touring. At the same time, I started a group for other obsessed people like me.
Right.
Called New York Arabic Orchestra, a nonprofit organization, incepted in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can live and breathe this music for everyone who was, like I said, obsessed and couldn't get it out of their heads.
That's cool. Then
that was it. Then I kind of picked up and left to Lebanon for a few years to work with refugee youth,
right,
teaching music there, and now I'm back.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, did you finish school, or were you like 180 and I'm like, I'm done, I'm dropping out, like,
yeah,
traveling? Or
I did. I finished school. Actually, I was in the process of finishing my master's, and I had a an externship going on at a friend's at a children's psychiatric hospital out in Long Island,
right. Mm-hmm.
And it was all going great. I was doing my psychology work, and those kids have to actually live there. They're court ordered to be there, so there's a school within, and all the things that come with a school. And I noticed there was a music room there, and I talked to the director of psychology. I said, "What's the deal? There's no one in this music room. There's no one using the drums or anything." She said, "Well, we try to hire a music teacher, and they don't last a day in here. So, mm-hmm. but if you want to take a shot at it," I said, "Yeah,
oh,
sure."
Wow.
So they gave me a group of girls, like 13, 14 years old girls. And they warned me. They said, you know, these girls are bad news. They're dangerous. You know, watch your back. And I said, okay, you know, no problem.
Bring it on.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
And sure enough, you know, I sat with them, teaching them drum set, which takes a lot of coordination, a lot of focus. And these girls have been through a lot, you know, and they've been also put on a lot of medications. And they're learning. They're learning. And then they also start teaching each other. And this, I remember a staff member coming through and not believing her eyes, not at all recognizing these kids. They said, "What happened?" I said, "Well, music, you know, drums." But the moment that really shifted me, to answer your question, one day one of those girls looked up at me and said to me in the eyes, you know, with such pride and self-esteem, said, "I'm a drummer," you know.
That's cool.
And that was it. I'm like,
that's awesome. Yeah,
you know what, music, like, I... And it was at the same time anyway that the economy crashed, so that job I was about to get didn't work out. So I said, you know what? The universe is saying, you know, you can get, first of all, work in music. It is a thing. It's been working. I've been traveling so far. And then when that girl said that, I said, you know, I mean, I don't think there's anything better than music therapy, so to speak, which sometimes is literally just teaching an instrument,
mm-hmm.
meeting someone at their level, just not another authority figure, not another person looking down at the kid, seeing them as bad or seeing them as wrong, like maybe their experience at home or at school, just someone wanting to share something, and something that gives them a sense of identity,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
sense of self-esteem. And so I said, this is it, this is what
that's
I'm
pretty incredible.
Yeah, and it's probably like an escape, right, from everything else they've going on.
Of course.
I can forget about it and zone in on something else.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So do you remember like what it was about the drums and percussion that drew you in originally?
Yes. Well, I mean, the end of third grade.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
They splayed out all the different instruments you're allowed to you know, suddenly start playing.
Right.
There was saxophone, there was trumpet, and then there was a snare drum, and I said, well, I know how to hit stuff now. But I think I also recognized that it fit my energy and personality, and they wanted to already pin me, like so many children with ADHD and whatever, and they talked to my parents, like they talked to so many parents about, oh, they got to put this kid on, you know, just because I had some energy, just right. Because I wanted to express myself more in school, and it wasn't enough. You know, there wasn't enough going on. So the drums definitely focused a lot of that energy while I was suffering through the style of, you know, of school in this country, you know, the sitting in one place and
right.
Really not learning all that much. But that's a topic for another day.
That's for part two.
Yeah, not learning nearly as much as I wanted to be learning. Right. So that absolutely focused me and directed my energies and gave me something to look forward to, something, you know, I would wake up early, you know, because they would put, like, band before school
right.
Because it's not, you know, shouldn't be part of the actual middle curriculum, right? So I would wake up excited to do concert band and, you know, it was
That's
definitely...
Cool. It's funny, I did that too, and I totally remember the day the guy comes in, lays out all the instruments, yeah. Whatever, right? So I go cruising home, and I'm telling my parents, like, I want to play trombone, because the dude put on, like, this show, he's marching yeah. Around, sliding this thing out, I'm like, that's awesome. So my parents, like, talk me off the ledge, they're like, no, you got to play drums, right? Meanwhile, they're thinking, like, that's the only instrument you don't have to buy, everything else, because you just got a drum pad, basically. So I was in the school band playing drums as well.
Cool. Saxophone.
Right. Nice.
A couple years, yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. Does that fit the aura?
Yeah,
nice. So did you, once you got into band, did like your interest in drums cross over into like music you listened to also? Like, did you pick that up quickly or was that like later?
Pretty quickly, yeah. I started pretty immediately playing with bands and garages and whatever we listened to, Nirvana, Stone Temple Pilots and stuff back
That's
then.
Cool.
And I think we played some Pennywise. And then when jazz came around in high school, that became another interest of mine.
Yeah.
And I loved the fluidity of that, which later interested me. And when I took on the hand drums, because a lot of that was expressed in a lot of the world drumming.
Right. So did you have favorite drummers from that time?
Definitely. Well, I was a big Tool fan.
Okay, cool.
So Dana Carey, for sure. David Grohl,
right,
for Nirvana and all those heavy hitters. So I listen to a lot of Led Zeppelin,
nice,
so Bonham for sure. And then it's, you know, Gene Krupa, the classics. I loved old big band swing,
right?
So I, you know, Gene Krupa, and
that's cool,
those dudes.
It's awesome.
It's funny, I remember like around that time too, like. Every kid in grammar school used to have the debate with all your friends, like, who's the best drummer, who's the best guitarist,
yeah,
you know, and, like, everyone's rattling off their favorites. It was,
yeah,
like, a never-ending battle.
Yeah. And they're different, you know, it's all different music, so
right.
Who can be the best?
So did you notice early on, like, or later, I guess, like, Zeppelin obviously incorporated a lot of Middle Eastern
totally.
Stuff, right?
Didn't know it at the time.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's such a... Now thinking back on all the rock music, that's a lot of the rock music that's popular, including Tool. There's a lot of, they use elements of drones and world music or Middle Eastern elements that put you in this mood and this vibe, and it's definitely used and abused in rock music
right.
For sure. Yeah.
So when you were overseas, how many years were you traveling?
I was 3 years in Lebanon.
Nice. Yeah. And did the experience that you had at the hospital with the kids in the States make you want to do that for the kids out there, or is that something that just kind of came your way and you followed through with it?
Yeah, I think it was unraveling over a period of years. I think it was around 2008 when I shifted my focus and I left the hospital and did music really full time, world music and performance and teaching world time full time. But yeah, 2013 was the year when I said, you know what, if I don't leave now, I don't think I ever will.
Mm-hmm.
And being like many people who grow up in America, I think we feel a little bit attached and afraid maybe to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I'll give myself 3 months. But all my friends said, you're going to love that place. You're not coming back. And sure enough, yeah, 3 months became 3 years.
Wow.
And, But I couldn't stand this thing of watching news here and feeling helpless. Felt like if I can do something, if I can contribute something.
Yeah.
And it was the best decision ever and the best work I've ever done.
So. Were there any standout moments? I'm sure there's a thousand, but was there anything that really...
Yeah, sure. Well, one particular camp, it's a well-known camp in Beirut called Shatila, and has decades of Palestinian refugees living there. And just a lot of horrific things that happened there, massacres, whatnot. And more recently, it's been taking in Syrian refugees, and there's really not any room, mm-hmm. but, you know, because of the Syrian war. So I was teaching at a school, if you will, within the camp for Syrian refugees. And, you know, in the camps, there's not really electricity. It's sort of flooded everywhere. There's a smell, you know, it's rough and dark and dank. And these kids would, you know, rush in because there was no other class they were experiencing all week. And the camp life is kind of rough. It's kind of dangerous. It's kind of difficult. And you see families, grandmother, you know, crouched, 10, 12 people in it looks like a basement, and they're stacked on top of each other. So these kids running into class, you know, to sing Arab songs and poetry and play the percussion, and they just didn't want to leave. It didn't matter if the place was dark and wet and no electricity. They just didn't want. It was like food and water to them.
Yeah.
And of course that contrasted hugely to the experience of, you know, teaching a lot of kids in the States, which, you know, they take education for granted. Mm-hmm. There was like everything, and that meant a lot to me. That was the moment.
Kept some hope alive, you know?
Yeah. Even if it's that one little drop that you make, I think it makes a difference for kids forever.
Yeah.
You know?
So when you got immersed in, like, the music, did you pick up language skills as well?
Yeah, I wanted to. Right. You know, I genuinely wanted to learn Arabic, so I just worked on it and I lived with people who didn't speak any English, so that worked.
Gotta learn. Gotta learn fast.
The rest of the way, yeah.
So at the time you were in Lebanon, you could kind of communicate?
Yeah.
At least basics or something with children? And
yeah, because those kids definitely don't speak English for the most part. I mean, they not even receiving Arabic music education. They're, a lot of them not receiving any education. Mm-hmm, so, so yeah, it was great to be able to converse with them.
Nice. And then year three, you come back to New York or back to the Jersey Shore?
Yeah, mix.
Mix.
I mean, now I'm fully Jersey Shored, but but I mean, you know, it's still,
it really wasn't that long ago, you
right?
Know?
It wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, most of my work is still in New York because, you know, the specialty and my student base and the gigs are, you know, it hasn't reached down here, but definitely that's my vision to bring. Yeah, world music, Middle Eastern music, Arabic music down to the shore.
Right. So when you were in Lebanon at that time, were you still performing, like, outside of the work you were doing with children? Were you popping out and doing gigs and that kind of stuff?
A lot, yeah.
And where were you going?
All over every little nook of Lebanon. And Lebanon is beautiful.
Right.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
It's always considered like this little jewel of the Middle East, and it's this gorgeous Mediterranean seaside, and then 2 minutes drive in, you're going up these incredible mountains. So you have it's like the size of New Jersey, the whole country, but the mountains and the valleys and the, you know, it's just gorgeous. So I traveled all over the country mostly. Popped in, you know, the Emirates and places like that, in Kuwait, and not as interesting. Dusty, hot, dry places.
Right.
I mean, Dubai is like one big space mall. I don't know.
Right.
But Lebanon is beautiful. And I toured with a well-known performer there mm-hmm. named Ziad al-Habani. Any Arab person would know who that is.
Right.
But anyway, he's son of Fairuz, who's like the diva, like someone who, like, if she performs in America or anywhere, she gets paid $1 million kind of thing. She's
right.
like the... So we toured a lot. We played like 3 times a week, and he had a thing for jazz to the point of making all of his audience crazy, but they didn't care. He just wanted to play jazz standards most of the time.
So you were playing jazz in Lebanon? Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask. Cool. Was there were you playing American music?
Oh my God, yeah. They're obsessed with it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, they're obsessed. I mean, which is the case if you go around the world, you know, you see that a lot. But every once in a while, we got to play his big concerts where we played his, like, his compositions and stuff, which I love. But yeah, you'll hear, like, you know, all these jazz standards and, you know, in Lebanon. And there's a Blue Note there, too.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really hilarious. We played there all the time.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So it's a decent touring scene, then?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever played that much. My life, like, 3 years there is, like, equals 10 years here.
Right.
People always playing, and practicing, and... maybe it's just easier, or maybe it's just, you know, there's also a smaller pool of musicians. I don't know what it is, but people love to play, and there's more time in the day there. I don't know, you know, it's just a lifestyle. You take 2-hour coffee, lunch breaks, you know.
That's nice.
You know,
I like that a lot.
At lunch, and dinner is like 10, all the shows are after 10:30, and yeah, so much performing, and life, and music, and art, and...
Mm-hmm.
and seize the day kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and music is a big part of the culture there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was such a golden age of music that happened, and unfortunately, they had their war, like 70s, 80s, 90s, which kind of upset it. And then, as a result of war, really in any country, especially a country with a long history. You know, there becomes this influx of really wanting the West more than ever, and wanting that kind of music and that art, and sort of wanting to push away the tradition. Push, like, the kids don't want anything to do with it, like, and say, "Oh, my country stinks," and music, who cares?
Right.
And they just want it. So when I came there, all they wanted to talk to me about, or all they wanted me to do, was, you know, anything, you
American,
know. And they were popping off names of bands. I don't know. Like,
Who's one of them? you know.
Well, I mean, I came to know people like Muse and all these bands that I did, at the time they love all these groups, and
that's pretty cool.
I'm terrible. Like, don't quiz me. But,
is there a decent, do Western bands tour there? Or where would kids have to go to see them? Like a big band?
Yeah, they have a big festival scene.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, like huge festivals on the water. And like I was saying,
it's
like
so
Muse
cool.
play, like, I'm forgetting the names of the bands. But bands, you all know.
Yeah. Right. No, that's cool. So what's it like when you're getting ready to go there? Like, you're just packing up and like, all right, like, are you scared? Are you doubting your decision? That kind of stuff?
My family probably was.
Right.
I already knew a lot of people from there. And I mean, rewinding back to like 2005 when I first met, you know, so many people of Arab descent, I was like, wow, these are the sweetest people I've ever known, the most affectionate people I've ever known. It's like, it was... You know, certainly not how they're depicted.
Right. So you were welcomed into the scene, like, right away?
Yeah, just the amount that people are open, and the way they talk freely and open, and you're just this family vibe. To be honest, you know, I would walk around sometimes in the middle of the night there, late after a gig, and felt so safe, because I knew that someone, if I needed something, that guy walking on the street would stop at nothing. He would drop everything he's doing and help me.
Right.
And I don't feel the same way in the States, to be honest. I mean, I guess I can't speak for all the states. I know New York, New Jersey, but you know what I'm saying? There's like this village mentality there. If anyone needs help on the side of the road, whatever.
Right.
They're there at your side.
That's why 3 months became 3 years, right? The comfort zone.
Yeah.
I think you caught it without a doubt, the social element.
Yeah.
I felt like, why am I so relaxed? Why am I so at peace? And I noticed that there weren't so many layers to people. They were just themselves right away. They were loving right away. They were interested. They were, if you walk into a bar, a restaurant, everyone just, we're all talking. And it's so funny, when back when I came to you know, when I returned in 2016 here, I expected the same, you know. So I walk into a bar, a restaurant, try to talk to people. They look at me like I got three heads. Yeah. You know? So yeah, you that's hit it on fun. The nail.
More walls.
More walls. Yeah.
So was it culture shock when you got back here?
It was tough.
Did you feel like alienated?
I was. I had a tough year in a way. I was kind of feeling a little down and a little like, can I do this?
Right.
You know. But I, you know, got. I'm here.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's cool. Like, I think about, like, if I was going to go on that kind of trip, like, A, I don't know if I have the courage to do it. Like, I'd like to think I do.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think of all the things, like, oh, how's this ever going to work out? What's going to go wrong? And, like, it's so cool that you just went and did it and, like, you know, had that experience. I think that's awesome.
I recommend it to anyone and everyone, you know, because it changes you forever, certainly,
sure.
being in a different culture and
mm-hmm.
You're never the same
right.
when you're touched like that, this sort of this loving environment, I would say and you know, traveling in general is very important. I recommend it to everyone.
Right.
Awesome. So speaking of traveling, you got multiple instruments, and
yes.
I've been wanting to ask for a while, so are they all from different regions of the world?
You could say they're all Middle Eastern.
Okay.
They're all pretty much played in, when we say Middle Eastern music, that usually covers the Arab world, it covers Turkey, it covers Greece as well. So these instruments basically are played in all those places.
Awesome. So what do we have? Because I was listening to the spelling and I just stopped. Before.
In my travels, like, I feel like that's a rick is what I want to say, probably.
Wow, yeah, how do you know that?
The untrained eye would probably think a tambourine or something, but yeah.
Yeah.
He's so talented.
Yeah, well, actually, it is a type of tambourine. So there's families of instruments around the world. Tambourines, lutes, you know, string instruments, plucking instruments, instruments that you play on the lap, you know, bowed instruments. So every country has their own type, right?
Right.
So this is the, I would say, Arab version of a tambourine.
Okay.
And this was the first instrument that hopped out at me, being a drum set player, because it has so many sounds and colors and subtleties that,
right.
that just, I was like, wow, how's that possible, all coming out of one little tambourine? And I've seen the sucker, like, lead a whole orchestra. Like,
really?
Amazing. So, I mean, I could...
Yeah, give
us a little demo of that.
Some sounds. Yeah, so it's not the type you hit against your leg. There's a few different sounds we can play on the skin. If we're playing something a little softer. Or if we want to brighten it up, we have actual cymbals. These are real cymbals
right.
inside here.
That's cool.
And each of them has a little bit of different tone, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
That's sweet.
And then you can also make it even more joyful and play the whole thing. So it's really cool. It's challenging. It took a lot. It took a lot of time, but
right.
it was great. But yeah, that's the Rick. Really cool instrument.
That is cool. So what did you pick up first, like, when you got into Middle Eastern music?
Yeah, the Rick and the oud was
cool.
my...
Okay.
The oud was my sort of other interest. It captured melodically what I wanted to do
right.
in life.
So where does, like, percussion and cymbals and things, like, what are their origins? Like, and where does Middle Eastern, like, line up in with that?
Well, you could say there was sort of a Great Persia,
okay.
and you know, you had. I mean, we have records of the first music school ever in the world, in southern Spain, actually.
Wow.
Put together by an Arab named Ziryab,
mm-hmm.
and basically, you know, microtonal music is I mean, older than we can kind of fathom. I mean, some of the instruments that are played. in Middle Eastern music are depicted in like the walls of the pyramids, for example. Right. So they're at least 6,000 years old, but they could, you know, they could be so old. And drums and flutes are some of the oldest instruments. Mm-hmm. And I don't have one with me. I wish I brought it. But the nai, the reed flute that mm-hmm. is used in Arab and Turkish and Greek music and Persian music, is just a piece of bamboo. Very simple.
Wow.
And they discovered it, you know, gosh knows how long, just from wind coming through the, like, the bamboos.
That's crazy.
Cut that off.
That's cool.
Dry it. And it's so beautiful. Right. So, and drums are also, I mean, as old as you can imagine. I'll talk about the frame drum, which mm-hmm. is, they think it could be as old as shamanism, which could be as old as 100,000 years, you know.
Yeah.
Because it was the tool for ceremony and for
battle too, right?
Healing, for blessing the earth, mm-hmm. you know, and still used to this day, especially by the indigenous, you know, Native Americans. You'll see them play it
mm-hmm.
When they're performing their blessings and ceremonies.
Right.
So, the frame drum, it's very simple, is a piece of wood with a skin over it
right.
on one side, so it could be goat or cow or fish usually.
Mm-hmm.
And then tambourines are a type of frame drum, just with cymbals
right.
or rings or whatever. So yeah, how old these things are, it's pretty old.
Right.
But focusing the history a little more, you know about the Silk Road mm-hmm. that traveled? Silk Road basically traveled from the Middle East all the way to the Far East.
Right.
And what's really cool is we hear a lot of influences of exchange back and forth. There's a little Middle Eastern elements that go all the way. Actually, there was a really great conference in Taiwan a few years ago where they explored music of the Silk Road together and brought experts in to talk about
it. That's pretty cool.
And in the steppes regions, like the Uyghur area, there's certain instruments that exactly look like some of the Middle Eastern long-necked instruments. But instead of referring to it as a specific microtone, they'll refer to it as a shake. You know, so maybe like the codifying is not quite there, but the sounds are still there. And then even I heard there's some Chinese instruments and East Asian instruments that have quarter tones there, but they may not necessarily refer to them specifically in written music as such. But interestingly, while we were there in Taiwan, there was 300-year-old music, Taiwanese music, Chinese music, that was exactly what you would call, quote, Arab music.
Wow.
It had the whole microtone system, the same scales, the same rhythms. So I think, I mean, my theory, you know, there's a lot, unfortunately, politically, music and culture is buried around the world, and it's hard to know exactly, but with all the research and all the traveling and reading and exploring this topic, I think there was definitely a link when Ziryab started this school. I think microtonal music was shared across the Silk Road.
Right.
You know, and to call it Arabic music is just what we call it because there's no other
right.
term. But microtonal music and the oud is played. I found out everywhere.
Right.
So it's really incredible.
That's cool. It's wild.
Oud is spelled OUD.
Yeah.
I don't know if you
nice,
knew that.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
Do you want to take a little musical break and play us something?
Sure.
All right, cool.
Yes.
Do you guys want a water?
Oh.
yep.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if we were going to be singing or not, so I figured.
What kind of stuff are you going to play?
I will play... Let's see. I'll play a short improvisation and song.
Nice. All right, so this is a new track, obviously.
So this is 11 strings.
I'm already intimidated. Like, I we'll talk about how you picked that up the first time after you're done. Thank you.
everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Improvisation.
Nice. Nice. That's cool.
That's really soothing.
Yeah.
It's like calming music.
So how did you get into the oud originally? Especially as a percussionist. Like, yeah. Is this considered a percussion instrument in a way, even though it's obviously a stringed instrument?
Well, certainly percussive. It's a type of plucking instrument, like part of the plucking family. It's considered the grandfather, actually, of like the lute. So it's a type of lute, and then it became the European lute, and then the guitar.
Right.
You know, so all these instruments that you sort of pluck at.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the plectrum is a little different. It's like a long piece of piece of horn, actually.
Is it really?
Yeah. Wow. Slice of horn.
That's crazy.
It's a little bit different. So instead of holding it tight, and you hold it in your whole hand.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Well, definitely. I also like it spoke to something. Something in me very instantly, like you said, like, wow, this is soothing, or this is very rich, or, and you know, something about also there was more notes there. It was almost like suddenly I could see more colors in life. It was just a additional experience,
right?
And you know, back in 2005, when I was just transformed and wanted to follow this music so heavily, it was because it wasn't just finding a music that fit. It was finding some emotional expression I was missing. You know, I don't know. Maybe a lot of us in America feel like we're missing that. You know, something that's like really, yeah. I guess emotional is the word, and deep and it was certainly intimidating being an American girl, seeing people just play this instrument and look into each other's eyes as they were doing it, and this was so much like love and yeah, emotion and feeling. And it took years to feel comfortable myself doing that, because there's no way of playing it without some element of emotion, because it's built in to these scales.
It's interesting, though, is like, that's what's weird now that you say that, is like, I hear that and I hear like thousands of years of like some culture, right? Because of those sounds. But you, like you just said, you're an American girl expressing yourself through this instrument, right? So that's kind of an interesting... Like, what's coming out is, like, like, what are you expressing at that time? It's totally different from the instrument's origins, which is weird.
Well, I, you know, before a lot of the lines were drawn between what country is which, you know, our history is so old. I mean, who we are, I mean, it goes far back before when lines were drawn.
Sure.
You know, this, and again, if these instruments were as old as at least several thousand years, then this, it's something personal to us.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be. So, you know, America existing for 300 years doesn't really mean much, you know?
Right.
I guess. Yeah. and who can explain these things, you know?
Yeah.
Why certain... I mean, gosh, I know so many people who are... certain other kinds of music speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Indonesian music. I know people who are just Americans or... Or I know, like, Japanese who want to do Brazilian music.
Right.
Like, that's what that just speaks to them. So, you know, mysteries and wonderful mysteries to life. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true. It's so old. The sounds are kind of in everyone already.
Yeah.
You know, they're in our veins.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's cool.
You know?
So was it hard to pick up the oud? Like, have you ever played guitar before?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I did play some guitar and bass and stuff. So if you play any instrument where you have to press down strings, you have a leg up.
Right.
Right,
so your left hand's probably similar. It's the right hand that would be a lot different, I guess.
Yeah, the right hand, it's different. It's a more of a dropping motion, which is kind of wonderful, actually, because you relax.
Uh-huh.
It's not a sort of a tight grip. It's... You actually let your whole hand go. And it's as if the instrument was designed for our exact anatomy. It's so kind of
beautiful.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just the weight of the hand and the extension of the wrist, and
right.
Plop, and it's sort of... you're relaxed even when you're playing.
Right.
And the left hand, you know, you have kind of frets, but...
Is it marked or
no? No, I mean, there aren't frets, but in the sense of, like, if you play cello or violin, it's same yeah. deal. So, but in this case, we have, you know, let's say this note. So let's say we're playing G, and then we're playing A flat, or we're playing A, but we also have A half flat. Mm. So you hear that? Versus,
right.
versus, we have,
that's cool,
yeah, so sweet. You just move, maybe you move your first finger a little bit depending on the flat or the half flat.
Right. And then how, like, I'm overwhelmed when I see this. I'm like, you walked in and you're going to tune this thing and it's got 11 strings. What's tuning like?
So this one, the modern ouds are F on the top, F on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
It's a little brighter. The original are C and C. So basically, from the high string is F, and then C, and then G, then A, and sorry, then D, excuse me, then A, and then you can tune your bass string how you like. I tuned it to G to have that nice...
Mm.
The nice communication there.
Yeah.
So
that was cool. It reminded me of, like, I don't know what the style of guitar would be, but, like, how you drop that, like, bass line and then go into other
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, dung, dung, dung.
Yeah. Yeah, you can answer yourself.
Right.
You know, the Yo-Yo Ma, the cellist, calls it, like, the king of the instruments.
Right.
The oud. He's obsessed with
it. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so.
That's awesome. So how do you find yourself between oud and percussion? Like, where's your love?
Oh, man. They satisfy definitely different things,
uh-huh.
for sure.
And could you play both, like, within the same group you're playing with? Like, you might play oud on some tracks or, you know, songs, and then percussion on others.
Yeah. I mean, here, play a beat real quick to see how it sounds together.
Drop a beat.
The Maxim.
That's the frame drum mic.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kira's getting in on the frame drum here. That's a jam for
yeah.
sure. I like it. All right, so we could talk about music forever. Let's shift to, like, a little bit of your business side.
Sure.
That's like our reverse mullet. We went from pleasure to business.
Yeah. I like that.
Which I'm even more blown away by. So you started, I guess it started, but it's not open yet, Fourth Wave Rehearsal Studios in Asbury. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the place came across my radar, like, online originally, and I was like, holy crap, look at this space, man. This is awesome. Like, so one thing you mentioned is you're combining, like, Asbury's architecture and arts, basically, I guess, is part of the spirit of the space.
That's beautiful. I should take that. How many is that?
So how did – what I'm more blown away by is, like, I saw this space. I'm like, that's cool. This is someone mm-hmm. that must have been entrenched in Asbury for like a long time, right. working on this, putting this together. Mm-hmm. But dude, you were in like overseas until like 3 years ago. So how did it all, and you said you spent a year like, you know, just getting back in the groove. So how did it all come together so quickly?
Yeah. Well, basically when I came back, I was sort of, you know, trying to figure out what to do. And the first sort of job that I had, a friend of mine hooked me up with Shore Christian Center. I was playing drums. Mm-hmm. It's here in Asbury. They have a House of Independence every Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Session.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, I think just within that time of, like, prayer and just, like, asking the universe, like, what should I do? You know, there was a moment, a very, very specific moment where suddenly it was like, start a business. I said, what? Start a business. I swear. Anyway, ever since then, I said, okay, let's work on this. And, you know, it took 2 years some to just get the zoning down and, you know,
right.
and variances and all this kind of stuff, you know.
Right.
Now we're finally rounding the corner. But, yeah, the dream quickly, you know, came to the surface of why a business. Because, you know, after everything that I've, you know, gone through in life, like a center like this would accomplish so many things that I would just love to offer community, mm-hmm. you know, like kids programming and just a safe space for all kinds of art, you know, whether it's world music or experimental music or really anything that anyone wants to express without having to, you know, please a bar crowd or please a Saturday night crowd.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a business too.
Sure.
But I personally would love to see a space where you can have anything to say or play and not feel intimidated or not be cut off or
right.
So that was a big thing behind it, and also all the touring I've done, my favorite places were always industrial spots.
Totally.
And, especially when I toured with Secret Chiefs 3, we stayed a lot of squats and we played and stayed in a lot of squats in right. Europe, which it's not even allowed here, but you know, big factories where artists live and create, you know, this beautiful space and put their art everywhere, and they have a stage too, and they host you and they make food for you and you sleep there. We slept in like shipping containers, all kinds of crazy things.
That's wild.
You know, cool. Sometimes with a mouse running around, but
right.
It's fine. So I just always loved that vibe. I feel like it's really conducive for making art and being creative and feeling relaxed to do that, feeling inspired to do that. So right. when we walked into this industrial space, you know, it was sort of pre-war, so it has this like already this amazing aesthetic. The walls, the bricks, everything has that cool almost like faux thing
right.
going on. And just big and lofty. So that's the one, man.
That's cool. So how did you find... What was the space originally?
Like a plastics factory for a while.
Was it?
It was something before that. But yeah, they were making plastics. So that good thing was it had tons of electricity, more than we would need
that's
already.
Cool.
So it had electricity and units within it ready to go. So our build-out's not insane.
Right.
You know. So definitely the first thing that... We wanted to give to Asbury Park was, you know, music rehearsal spaces. I feel like a dedicated music rehearsal spaces
mm-hmm.
is what the city needs. But, yeah, then, of course, we expanded into thinking about, you know, well, let's also have a dance studio. Let's have a photo video studio. Let's have a place where maybe people could do live, you know, maybe podcasts, maybe right. live casts. What are they called? I forget the word. And streaming and...
Yep.
and theater and, you know, black box and, you know, and the dream started bubbling and pop-ups and, you know, conferences and parties and special
right.
events.
That's cool.
So yeah, that's 6,000 square feet altogether.
Which is insane.
Which is nice. Right. And there's 2,000 square feet of just open space, mm-hmm. which we picture a lot of these great, workshops, classes, concerts, kids stuff, you
that's
know,
cool.
parties, right. weddings to go on.
Right.
And then you have another 1,000 square foot room, which is great for, we're going to make it a dance studio slash photo video slash a place where a really large band or choir or orchestra could rehearse in there.
Right.
And then we'll have two That's very cool. dedicated music rooms with equipment in there all the time.
Right.
Mm. And one more, actually, a smaller room, we're going to make it like an acoustic room, which could be great for a singer, for a jazz band, for a teacher.
Right.
So it's a really great space.
And then there's like co-working kind of possible there, right? Like people could just come and hang out and work or create or whatever.
Yeah, we're exploring that.
Right.
We hope to achieve that too. Absolutely.
So what's your time frame? You said like you anticipate maybe the fall opening.
Yeah, the fall.
What kind of opening are you gonna throw together? Is there like an event you're planning?
Oh, for sure. It'll be a bash. I think people have been chomping at a bit for so long now because we've been teasing them with launch event after launch event.
Right.
It'll be a bash for sure.
That's cool. And is it something like you'll? Like, are you going to be, like, headlining kind of thing? Or are you going to be part of it? And a lot of local artists? Or what are you going
to
do?
Yeah. I mean, I try not to insert myself musically and all that.
So you're keeping this on the business side.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be like, hey, April. No, but I do, like, all of our launch events so far, you know, we're trying to just showcase different bands in the area
right.
and mm-hmm. different genres. And really, it's been collaborative because those bands that want to perform
right.
are so looking forward to a space like this.
That's actually what I saw is you, one of your original performances was, I want to say, at the Saint, and I couldn't make it. It was like a really sick lineup, and I was like, wow, what's this thing they're doing? It's for this space to mm-hmm. like raise, you know,
awareness.
It was awareness and everything. So you've had a couple already. There was that one, but you have a couple up coming up on the 19th at Langosta Lounge. That's where Mama Drama's playing. Who else is at that one?
Daughter Vision. We're actually opening up with his name is Schmidt. He does a rendition of Bea Arthur,
right?
Like a drag rendition. So we have like a 30-minute sort of drag show
right.
initially, and then he's going to do a cool like sort of emceeing of the show. So we'll have cool. Mama Drama, Daughter Vision.
That's pretty cool.
And I am playing at the very end with a really great sort of world electronica thing.
Uh-huh.
Named Rang Cherries.
So okay,
that's
cool.
That's nice.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, so where's the space? Are you allowed to say where it is yet or no?
Sure. Well, it shares the lot with the brewery, the Asbury Park Brewery.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's actually kind of the same type of building, mm-hmm. I'd say. I think the plastic company used to use both of them at some time.
That's awesome.
Some point.
It's a good spot.
It's great. It's by the track. So, you know, and there's no resonance is really round,
right.
so you know, making
you could get loud,
yeah. Totally.
That's cool. Yeah. And then once again, you'll be
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got, from plate loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
On August 11th at the Clinch Gallery for for another event.
Yeah, that'll That's have sweet. Like Tara Dente and Cat London and more and a lot of female musicians and some folk music, and maybe I'll do something to it. I want to share some of this different kind of music, so
yeah.
inserting it here and there, but trying not to insert me,
right.
trying to insert the music.
That's cool.
We're just vessels anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that could inspire like kids or
Who
other
knows,
people
yeah.
that wouldn't be exposed to that type of music around here. Like you found it in the city where it's a lot
yeah,
more common.
Totally.
You know? So that's pretty cool. So what was like the biggest challenge when you took the leap of, all right, I'm going to put this business together?
Well, you certainly have to jump through a lot of hoops mm. in any city,
right.
you know, to get it, all the details, get it, you know, but actually I have to say the city was very enthusiastic, which
right.
was awesome, you know. The zoning board was really, really thrilled,
That's
to be
cool.
honest. And that's a good sign mm-hmm. for the city. Right. I don't know. I think, you know, the city obviously is changing rapidly. And I think there's more pressure on you know, emerging arts related things. You know, obviously things are more expensive.
Yeah.
That goes without saying. You know, and for example, a lot of the parking may start disappearing and becoming paid parking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, we still have sort of general parking around there. So
that's cool.
That's cool. You know, I mean, the city has a divide that everyone is aware of. You know, you have these, you know, very wealthy things emerging, and then there's still the local community. And we hope to be part of just bridging that gap a little
right.
bit mm-hmm. and welcoming the local community into and having community events and
yeah. cool.
workshops and working with the local schools and local community centers.
Right.
So we don't want to just land in the city, be another business that I feel doesn't really take notice of this without, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you're in a perfect spot. I mean, yeah. you're technically, you know, the train tracks are kind of what the border is. You got the west right. side, and then
yeah.
you know, the up and coming. So that's good,
right? And even the whole area in the quote east side, you know, is very multicultural, and I hope to just extend to them too.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be able to provide things that are affordable and
mm-hmm.
and are inclusive and. Inclusivity is like our number one goal.
Yeah, that's cool. Sure. Like I noticed you did invited like a lot of local artists and photographers to come in and
yeah.
take pics in the space early on. I thought that was a cool way to get everyone kind of in yeah. the mix, right?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, a lot of people forget that we also have a lot of great artists and photographers and, you know, and besides musicians and, mm-hmm. and just I think having everyone involved and
right.
doing little mm-hmm. elements of, and also for them to know that this is a place that they can utilize soon too.
Right.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, I'm super excited to check it out in the fall.
Yeah,
I'll keep
yeah,
an eye out for that.
The space
sounds so cool.
The space is intense
yeah.
for sure. It's super cool.
Yeah.
I've been like dying to get in there like for a while. I was shot down though, man. Like, there's a lot of construction going on. No one's really coming yet. Tell us about the name. So, in your mission and vision, you say the fourth wave is named after the current wave of feminism, which addresses free expression, inclusiveness, and diversity. So, what's the origin of the fourth wave? I wasn't familiar with that. So, tell us about that.
Yeah, basically, well, wave, I mean, we're near the ocean and
right.
we love the ocean. Ocean's very important to us. Yeah, fourth wave is the current wave of feminism, and you know, feminism is definitely a word that's misunderstood a lot. And, you know, at, like basically, feminism is just talking about equality, and a lot of the issues of feminism is equality for everyone, not just women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just brings to the fore things that are existing, even though you know sometimes in America or you know we're not so aware of. As long as there are women that are experiencing, you know, mutilation or abuse in some country,
mm-hmm.
or even in this country, if there are still women not being paid enough or not being hired or not being allowed to express themselves as much as their male counterpart, whatever it may
right.
be, subtle things.
Yeah.
There's always a reason for feminist, you know, for,
right.
for feminist conversation, and it got very thwarted by. This belief that it's a lot of angry people who hate men. This is like we
right.
want to like get this out.
I mean, so, on the equal pay note, like let's quickly drop in the U.S. Yeah. women's soccer
Shout
team,
out.
Right?
Yeah.
I
yeah.
mean, they should be making like four times what the men make. You know what I'm saying? Like not just yeah. the same. I mean,
yeah.
they crushed it and have been like epic for a while. You know?
Yeah, yeah, they're the best in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
But the women's sports are not.
Right.
You know, as no. I mean, if you walk into a bar, if you see any women's sports, I feel like it's the UFC now. Watching
yeah.
two women like punch each other apart,
well,
but it's like what?
You know, I was shocked though. So we actually not to get too off topic, but my wife and I two Fridays ago went to watch the U.S. soccer team, right? The
yeah.
girls' soccer team play, and the bar was packed. We went to Jamian's in Red
Bank.
That's awesome. Yeah. It was packed with guys watching the TV, drinking beers. And like, you know what? This is
yeah. The ratings
this is
were
great.
Pretty, apparently, really
Dublin
high.
House was packed. Red Rock, you know.
Hey man, that's cool. That's yeah. a good movement. Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about that, it's like, it's you know, we live in a capitalist world. You know, it's like yeah. If you get ratings. So the interesting thing, again, a little bit off topic, but the recent Pride parade in New York was heavily criticized because of, you know, literally every business was supporting, and, you know, TD Bank and all this, Starbucks, and you couldn't go anywhere without seeing, like, Pride support.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that are like, it was supposed to be a protest. And of course, there's reasons for that it should be a protest based on things that are still going on and violence and this. But, you know, we live in this world where if you're supported by something that feels like they can get their investment in advertising, I mean, it's kind of the way the world is. And I don't think doesn't mean that it's a bad direction. It's kind of a necessary one, unfortunately.
Right. Sometimes you got to take the good with the bad in a way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
To make baby steps a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
What was your experience as a woman in Lebanon? Like, was it tough there? Like, do you feel a difference between there and here culturally?
Well, that was also kind of surprising.
Yeah.
You know, the women are tough, really tough, and really outspoken there. It's the point where I was like, oh man, I need to step up a little bit. Like, if there's anything they're not satisfied with in a restaurant or whatever, like, they will tell. Like, but there's also this sense of service is important there too. So it's they're not met with like, oh well, the heck with you. No, it's like, we will absolutely serve you exactly how you want to be served. So it's a bit of both, like, there. But yeah, women were owning a lot of stuff, a lot of women business owners, a lot of women leadership, a lot of CEO women, a lot of just outspoken, tough women. I was like, and that taught me a lot. The game actually was a good education. And interestingly too, just a lot of I think a lot of other types of freedoms that I didn't expect, you know, in terms of just, you know, gender, sexual expression, which was, like, also surprising. You know, very free, open-minded. It feels like worlds ahead kind of thinking there in a lot of ways. But at the same time, you have, like, the law, which is very old-fashioned, and, you know, in all of, you know, these countries. So it's, like, at odds, but very intelligent, very aware. I mean, I felt like they knew more about American politics than we do.
Right.
Definitely. I mean, things like that. Right. Gosh. Yeah,
it's always amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
All right, cool. So let me drop a couple websites, domains, dates, and everything, and then you want to play us out one more song?
I was hoping you were going to say that, yeah.
All right, cool.
I got to hear one more.
All right, so once again, check out fourthwaveap.com, fourth spelled out. At fourthwaveap on Instagram and Facebook. April, check her site out, aprildrums.com, and at April Centrone, C-E-N-T-R-O-N-E. Check out the Fourth Wave dates coming up. We're going to get Mike on a saxophone out there. You got to get this guy.
It's been years.
So 7/19, you'll be at Langosta Lounge, 8/11 at Danny Clint's Transparent Gallery. Excuse me. And then September, man, Fourth Wave, right?
Yeah.
The pressure's, the countdown's on.
Countdown.
All right, sweet. So, all right, we'll get people, check it out online, get ready for the fall. Fourth Wave Rehearsal Studios will be opening. What do you want to play for us on your way out of here?
Well, gee, I don't know. Maybe I'll actually take a sing. I'll sing.
All right, let's do it.
This is a very, very old music from what's called the Andalusian period from southern Spain, when the Arabs were there like 700 years, in a rhythm cycle of 10 beats per measure. And it's one of the most famous songs, and it's at least, 1,000 years old. I don't know.
Wow.
So, and it has some pretty cool old Arabic poetry that I'll sing. You want to play for me?
I love this.
All right, and don't forget to shout out Kira Sanchez, dropping some percussion. She's a little shy with the mic, but she can drop the beat.
Should I play? I don't play anything. Here, play it. Mm-hmm.
I know, totally. You want to tell us real quick what that's about?
Sure. Like all these songs, they're basically love songs. Mm. And sort of about like this person who's dancing and they're so beautiful. And, you know, right. A lot of these songs are about love and nature and drinking wine.
the this, best thing.
Yeah.
Longing.
Longing, yeah. This is a song that we taught the kids. Well, gosh, we've taught kids everywhere in the refugee camps and New York City public schools and Taiwan. This is a song that you just heard, which is like heard by many.
It's classic.
It's a really, really beautiful song. And I figured to keep the mood like slightly up, we could do like 30 seconds of something.
All right, what's this instrument called again?
So this, last but not least, is the darbuka, D-A-R-B-U-K-A, and it's associated a lot with belly dance.
Okay.
So we'll do like a quick little, a very, very quick little like belly dance solo style.
Awesome.
Thing.
Ming, you're going to belly dance for us?
I get to pull it out, right?
Sweet. Get in the middle over there to give us a belly dance.
I left my gear at home.
Cool.
That
was really sweet. Darbuka rocks. That seems like something would be fun for a percussionist to pick up and start.
Totally. Yeah, it's definitely most of my students want to study that.
Right, right.
I mean, they want to study that and this because this is like also, this is probably the easiest one. It's super easy.
Right.
So, you know, that's most of my students, and then the fewest of my students are that's hard. The Rick is hard.
Right.
But darbuka and frame drum are
That's cool.
Are popular.
That's awesome.
And there's a lot going on. Like, many fingers and palm touches to get different sounds.
Yeah,
right?
You can if you press the.
I had to.
If you like, if it's you know, if you mute it a little bit, like this, mm-hmm. you have different pitches.
Right, that was cool.
Yeah, you were doing that, and then you're flicking it as you run.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Then there's, you know, techniques like that, which actually Persian technique where you let all your fingers drop and it sounds like a lot of people rolling at once, but just like heavy hands and
that's really
a lot
cool.
of cool stuff.
Awesome. April, thanks very much for coming in.
Yeah,
Kira, thanks for coming
Thank
in
you
as
guys.
Well. We definitely appreciate it. Once again, check out fourthwaveap.com, aprildrums.com, at April Centrone. We are the Mulletcast. My name is Evan Balmer. Follow me on Instagram at Evan Balmer.
Mike Marcia at MortgageGuy_Mike. Thank you, guys. That was awesome.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.